Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Welcome, everyone, to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Seth, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Seth.
For those who care to join us, let us open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer. Actually, they're not across the main foyer. Down the hall and to the left. Up the stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry the clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and to help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for our AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorse nor oppose any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation, ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 10. Please welcome to our panel this evening, Ms. Grace and Mr. David. I will read the first paragraph on page 84, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each of the reading. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. Page 84. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Who would like to go first?
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is David.
Hey, David.
I'm grateful to be here and grateful to be sober tonight. I have a sobriety date. It's October 24th, 1989. I have a sponsor. My sponsor is aware that he sponsors me. It's not a theoretical relationship. I have the privilege of working with other men in 12 steps of the program, and this is my home group. And there's a lot of people that I love very, very much and who have absolutely changed my life for knowing them in this room tonight. And that's kind of a good deal that we get here. So that's that. He just read the step 10 thing. I'm gonna qualify a little bit. I was kind of raised that way in AA. You know, just so you know that I didn't get here because I ate too many chocolate chip cookies. I absolutely did eat too many chocolate chip cookies, but that's not why I'm here. I say I'm an alcoholic, and the reason I say that, what I believe about that is that I've got that thing. I've got that thing where once I start drinking, I don't stop drinking. Once a drink of alcohol makes me thirsty. I never finished any amount of alcohol and thought, it's good. stop there. I drink to get drunk. I'm not interested in being tipsy. I don't care about a warm glow. Catching a buzz is just a good beginning as far as I'm concerned. I like getting ripped out of the frame, hammered, regrettably, stupid, falling down, drunk. That's just drinking to me. I thought for a long time that was my choice, that's what I wanted. I had no idea that I have a body that once I put any alcohol in it whatsoever, that is going to happen no matter what. It's really not up to me. It took 10 years for me to go, you know, maybe that's true. I got here, I was 22 years old when I got here, and somebody told me that, right? I had 6 more years of trying to make that not true, you know? And then I've got that thing where if I stop drinking, if drinking becomes a problem, I'm carrying around this unit in my head that's always talking to me. I don't know about your head, but mine's just always just chattering. It's chattering to me about me, chattering to me about you, doesn't like any of us, you know, doesn't have a particularly bright outlook for the future, you know, no matter where I am. I'm not restless, but wherever I am, I want to be somewhere else. You know, I'm not irritable. I'm just easily disturbed. I'm surrounded by idiots. I mean, why wouldn't I be, you know? You know, and I'm not discontent because I'm sure next week everything's going to be fine, you know? But I live that way, man. I mean, I've lived that way since before I ever took my first drink. I'm scared to death of people, scared to being alone, worried to death about the future. Nah, things aren't going to work out for David, and I took a drink of alcohol, and all that stuff went away. You know, it was like the missing ingredient in my bloodstream, you know? And then once that works, you know, it becomes a problem, but still, you're going to take away the one thing that gets me some freedom, the one thing that gets me some peace, the one thing that makes me feel like I actually fit in the world, that I actually belong here, you know, that everything is going to be okay, liquid hope, you know? I did not want drinking to be the problem. And then once I figured out drinking was the problem and I came here, you guys were like, yeah, drinking's not the problem. Like, damn it. So anyway, I got here at age 22, didn't take. I had to keep coming in and out. I had to experience periods of sobriety, you know, periods of time where I'm not drinking and I'm just hating everything and everybody, and eventually I break a shoelace and get drunk. And, you know, I'm sort of a binge drinker, really. The last 6 years of my drinking, I was really just uncomfortable periods of sobriety marked by uncomfortable, miserable periods of drunkenness, you know, and some of those would last for weeks and some of those would last for months, sometimes just a day or two, you know, go on a binge, put the plug back in the jug, go back to the gym, new diet, new exercise program, new psychiatrist, new girlfriend, new town. I'm going to move all the pieces around, man, you know, because I'm trying to manage my life. And anyway, alcohol had its way with me, and I came here and surrendered 6 months uncomfortably sober, didn't want your program, didn't want your phone number, didn't want to be part of this thing, 12 steps, not interested. It's cute, I get it. They stuck numbers on it for dumb people, and you know, I didn't want it, but I just got beaten up enough where I was like, I don't have a better idea. I mean, that's the simple surrender that ended up with me. I just really, deep down in my heart, I sat in a room like this with people just like you, looking at a floor just like this, and I thought, I really don't have a better idea. I was beaten, and I knew I was beaten. So from there, I was willing enough. I wouldn't say I was totally willing or open-minded or any of that, but I was willing enough to get a sponsor, and I was willing enough to start taking suggestions. Yeah, I'll go to more than one meeting a month, you know. Yeah, I'll join a home group. Yeah, okay, I'll make your coffee. Would you like to be the intergroup rep, David? I don't know what that is. We don't know what that is either, but maybe you could go down there on Tuesday nights and find out. Okay, I'll do it. And I just started doing AA. And along the way, I got a sponsor, and I started doing these steps, and I started praying to a God that I didn't even believe in. I wrote that inventory for the first time, and I found out some truth about myself. I found out that I'm capable of being angry with people. I'm capable of being angry with people for doing to me the very same thing I'm capable of doing to the next guy. You see that in black and white. You can't escape it, you know? when I looked, you know, write down your fears, you know. It's like I wrote down, all right, I'll write down my fears. My number one fear is being alone, you know. And I don't mean like I'm happy in my own company, you know. I have an engineering mind. I like projects. I like piddling. I don't mind being by myself. But I mean like having no friends, having no love, no kindness, no pity, just not being valued at all by anybody, that kind of alone. And that's my worst fear. And then, I didn't know that about myself, you know. And what's your number two fear? People. And I'm telling you, that was a spiritual experience in and of itself, because I look back at that, I was like, no wonder I need chemical assistance to get along in the world. This is a problem, clearly, you know. And all my malfeasance in relationships, and I told the guy those things, and I began to pray again to a guy that I didn't believe in, and I started going out knocking on the doors and paying back the money, and my relationships improved. My ability to show up at work improved. My ability to sit still improved. My ability to be wrong improved. You know, life just changed, you know. So what does any of that have to do with drinking, you know? I do absolutely believe that the same person who walks through those doors and sits down, if they don't change, is going to walk right back out those doors again. And I don't want to drink anymore. I don't want to go out those doors again. I want to be changed. I want to be changed from the inside. I still, 29 years later, I still don't have a better idea. Okay? So this thought brings us to step 10, right? We read it tonight. And what is the thought, right? We just read those magnificent promises that they read at every meeting, right? New freedom, new happiness. Ooh, I like that, you know. I don't regret the past anymore. I wish to shut the door on it. Fear of financial insecurity has left me. Ooh, this is awesome. I'm getting stuff. I like it. It says these things will always materialize if we work for them. And this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living. There's that idea again, you know, that this is a way of living one day at a time. We have some actions that we take in a way that's suggested, right? It's a way of life. It's not something that we're going to graduate from. I don't want to disappoint anybody. I really wanted to graduate. We've entered the world of the Spirit, and our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. We really shortchange step 10 in a bunch of different ways around here. One of them is referring to it as a maintenance step, right? 10, 11, 12 are maintenance steps. I think that's garbage. I should say that nicer.
How?
I don't know about anybody else, but I've never gotten to a point in my recovery where I'm like, I'm good, I think I'll maintain this. You know, my grand sponsor calls them growth and living steps. And that appeals to me. That's what I want to do. I want to grow. To live is to grow. Anything alive grows. You know, you stop growing, you're dying. And I've died emotionally. I've nearly died physically. I'm tired of it. Got the T-shirt. I would like to grow in all ways, but this is in understanding and effectiveness. We found out in the step prior that our real function is to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. That doesn't have anything to do with drinking. So we're going to grow and over. And this is kind of a bummer. It's not an overnight matter. It's going to continue for our lifetime. And then he gives us the instructions. These are the actions that I believe are here for the 10th step. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Right? Well, where do we find those first? Right? We looked at those in step 4. Right? We did our inventory. That's all we inventoried. Where were we? Resentful, frightened, selfish, dishonest. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. Sounds like 6 and 7, right? We discuss them with someone immediately. Sounds like step 5. Make amends quickly. Sounds like steps 8 and 9, if we've harmed anyone. So, like, this is a lot of stuff in here, right? I mean, he's basically saying, how about you do step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 a day? You know, we did it. We learned how to do it with our past, right? Because we'd never done it before. So it makes sense to start with your past, because you got a whole hopper full of material there, that hasn't been looked at. So we go through and we get the skills. Well, guess what? None of us get, you know, rendered white as snow, right? You know, we were talking about it before the meeting. I mean, like, my mind is waiting for me as soon as I wake up. You know, I wake up every morning. I don't wake up and spring out of bed and go, oh, joy, another day. You know, it's like my mind is like, good, glad you're up. Everything is screwed up. It's like there's been a meeting, you know, in my absence. They're just waiting for me, you know, because they need me to carry them around all day. I'm like, can I get a cup of coffee before we talk about this? So we're going to keep doing those steps. And then look at this. We resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. How'd step 12 get in there? What's up with that? And love and tolerance of others is our code. Love and tolerance of others is our code. I mean, we haven't encountered this yet, right? So what does that look like on a daily basis, right? What is, you know, love? I know what I think love is. I've come to understand that love is an action. Love is a doing thing. I can say, oh, I just love my wife. Oh, I just love my kids. I might even enjoy the feelings that recognition brings. It's like, oh, just love them, adore them, the thought of them, oh, just delightful. Yeah? Well, have you cooked a nutritious meal for your children lately, David? You know, do your actions bear out the love that you have for your wife? Are your words and your actions backing up that? Some days I don't answer that question very well, but I think it's worth asking. So love is an action, and I'll say this. I got two things before I shut up. Tolerance. My sponsor really changed my thinking on this in a profound way that's useful, and that's why I'm kind of at pains to share it. Because he described exactly my attitude, like tolerance. He always looked at tolerance as in to tolerate or to endure, right? I'm practicing tolerance with this mother, you know. There's a person in my home group, I got to practice tolerance, you know. And I'm just enduring. But the idea has more to do with understanding, kind of like the way we think about religious tolerance. It's an American value, right? Our country was founded on the ideas of religious tolerance. And what does that really mean? That means you get to do whatever you want in that regard. You know, I got nothing to say about it, right? It's cool. It's fine. Whatever religion you want to practice is entirely your affair. Well, what if I could bring that level of tolerance into my home group, into my family, into my interactions? That you guys get to be who you are without interference from the big brain that I'm carrying around. God Jr., you know, the opinions. What if I brought that level of, or practiced that level of tolerance? Because I use that word deliberately too, because for me, it's practice. And without you, I can't even remember to practice. So what does that look like on a daily basis for me? Every morning I roll out of bed, despite the state of the committee, and I bend my knees to the ground. I roll out of bed onto my knees. I believe that is an action consistent with the first two steps. That is a physical acknowledgement that of myself I am nothing, and without something, without a higher power, without you people, without something, I am lost. So I go to my knees as a gesture of that, and I try to recommit to that third step position. That I am his agent, I am his child, I am his servant. And as far as I can tell, all he wants me to do is take care of his kids, you know? And the old timers used to say, God doesn't have grandkids. So my mother is my sister and my sons are my brothers, and I'm supposed to take care of all of you. So can I recommit to that? And if I've recommitted to that, then I get to do these actions. I can continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And in a practical way, where I've found this to be the most effective is in the daily phone calls. It doesn't say anywhere in this book to call three drunks every day. But that's what they told me to do. And on a good day, when you call me, when a drunk calls me on a good day, on a bad day, when a drunk calls me and asks me how I'm doing, I tell them what I'm doing, you know? Just go through the itinerary, you know? Yeah, well, I'm up to this and up to that and blah, blah, blah. You know, but on a really good day, I'll tell you that I'm glad you called. I got a little resentment cooking. I said something shitty to my wife last night and I feel terrible about it and I haven't cleaned it up yet, you know? I got a little fear going. I got a little fear cooking of financial insecurity, you know? That's how I'm doing today. I start discussing this with someone immediately. So I usually get to you first. Like, I know we're supposed to go to the Father first, right? Oh, I've got some fear. I better pray. And I do that sometimes. But most of the time where it's revealed to me is when I'm interacting with you. When I'm telling you the truth about me, we all kind of get to the same place together. It's like, oh, yeah, I got some of that going on too. Maybe we need God. Yeah, let's let's go ahead and pray, you know. So that 10th step, discussing with stuff immediately, showing up in front of you. I have learned a little bit about living transparently today. You know, I can honestly tell you that there are several people alive on this planet today that know me, that know everything there is to know about me. You know, I don't have a secret garden of anything that I'm hiding. I've got plenty of stuff I'm not proud of, but there's plenty of people who know about it, you know? And that's what I've learned here, to just be transparent. The other thing that I think we do a big disservice with step 10 is somehow, you go to an open discussion meeting, if step 10's the topic, I guarantee you somebody's gonna say, when I do this at night, I'm like, what? I cannot wait until the nighttime to be loving and tolerant. I can't wait until nighttime to watch for fear. I don't want to spend the whole day in fear and then figure it out at night. I need a mechanism for it to be discovered and shared, discarded, and given the opportunity for the proper authority to remove it from me so I can get unscrewed today. Thanks.
Thank you, David. I'm Grace. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Grace.
Ditto, 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 ditto. I think he's just about summed it up. I'm going to qualify a little bit. I think David did a really good job explaining alcohol, what alcoholism looks like. When I got here, I didn't get here that young. but I did experiment with alcohol being the problem for a while, for a long time. At about 27, something really bad happened, as most of us didn't roll up in here on a winning streak. And I said, I got to stop drinking. This is really bad. So at 27, I put the booze down. And I was the same alcoholic at age 12 that I was then, and I was when I finally got to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I was still had some ideas, my own ideas. I wasn't willing to listen to anybody else yet. And so I put the drink down, and I went on my happy little way, created a whole bunch of little people, took a lot of hostages, and eventually I picked up again. I never entered these rooms. I don't know how that happened. AA wasn't hiding from me. But and I wasn't really avoiding it. It just didn't happen. So I went on a 10-year debacle where people died, and I hurt a lot of people. And I wound up here. And my sobriety date, which is just a date, I don't actually remember my last drunk, and I have actually heard people say, if you can't remember your last drunk, you're going to get drunk again. I hope they're wrong. because the date I have is the day they threw my ass in rehab and across state lines, and that's August 31, 2011. When I got here, alcohol had pretty much beaten me all the way through steps 1, 2, and 3. I was powerless. My life was clearly unmanageable. I was ready for help. I knew it wasn't me anymore, and I was willing to do, I'd made a decision to do whatever I was told. No questions asked. I think if I'd have had a husband, or if I hadn't given my children away, or if I had a house, a job, or anything else, it might have looked a little different. But that's not what happened to me. So when I got here, I got a sponsor. I did what I was told, and she wasn't a prayer that I recall. She's never around when I say that. I keep thinking she's going to say, I told you to pray. But I don't remember hearing it. She said, get a job, work on your resume, and, go to meetings. And we went to meetings every single day, and I fell in love with the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is how awesome God is. She was not a Big Book thumper. She loved the 12 and 12. But you couldn't keep me out of this thing. You couldn't keep me out of it. It was like they had written it about me. I thought, how did they know? How did they know? They wrote what I thought, how I felt, and I couldn't wait to get to the next page. I too, thank goodness, you know, when it was time for me to write my fourth step, I did a crappy job, but apparently it doesn't really matter. I stayed sober. I was willing to do it. And I've continued to work through those steps. This 10th step, I thought today, I've spoken here a few times, and I said to David beforehand, it's shocking how self-centered I could still be. I always wonder, they keep asking me back because I think I do a crappy job. But here I am again. So I was going to write notes. That didn't go well. So I live in the 10th step because for me, the 10th step is a culmination of all the steps. That's what it is. It, as he said, it forces me to admit that I am powerless over whatever situation has me willing to take my own damn inventory again. It's real clear. It says, continue to take personal inventory. So I did that the first time in the fourth step, and I did it not so reluctantly. I did a crappy job. But I did it because I had to stop blaming you. You are no longer the problem, I am. Whenever I'm disturbed, the problem is me. This is what I've been taught here. If you're still the problem, I'm in a world of trouble. And I don't want to be disturbed anymore. I don't like drinking's not a solution anymore. So I have to get undisturbed. So I look at me. And that's what this is about, constantly. David said it is, I agree. If I waited till I went to bed at night to take inventory, someone could have died by then. I mean, I don't react well with others, left on my own. I just don't. I've been told people are afraid of me. I mean, that's scary. So I have to do this continually. And I have this gauge inside of me now. I know when I'm disturbed. I know it's not a problem unless I'm unhappy, right? You can be all upset all you want, but it doesn't really bother me. But if I'm bothered, it's a problem. It's a problem. And the old me, that's how I rolled, man. Because if you weren't doing what I needed you to do for me to be okay, there was hell to pay. There was hell to pay. And I can't do that anymore. Again, drinking's not an option. So we've moved up here. We're in the 10th step. The spiritual, it says, we have entered the world of the spirit. There's a speaker that I adore, Sandy Beach. He's gone to the big meeting in the sky. And he does there's a tape. It's on forgiveness, but he's talking about this. And he's the one that talks about the disturbance, you know. It's only a problem if I'm disturbed. There's the material world that I lived in the previous. I'm not going to give away my age here. I used to do that. I'm not going to do it. Okay. Decades. It's the material world where the house I lived in, the job I had, my bank account, how productive and cute my kids were, you know, whatever. That's what deemed success to me. And then I get over here, and now I'm entering the world of the spirit. I'm trying to be the spiritual person. And Sandy Beach, he talks about that. And he says, you know, the winners, we just talked about it, the material world, the ones with all the stuff. The winners in the spiritual world are the ones that are the least disturbed. The least disturbed. It's not about their bank accounts. That's what I need to be. I need to find a way to be the least disturbed. And clearly here, because it says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, just like was stated, our four-step stuff, taking that inventory. And then it says, when these crop up, not if. It didn't say if, it said when. It means they're going to happen. Shit's going to happen. Tells me what to do, clear directions. You want to hide something from an alcoholic? Put it in the big book. There's four things to do. I, too, don't always immediately go to God. If all I did was do, I have to call somebody. I have to pick up the phone and call somebody. I'm the telephone girl. Thank God I don't mind picking up the 500-pound phone. I do it all day long. The point is I'm trying to get to God to remove, to give whatever it is that's got me all tied up. But the simple act of talking to somebody and telling them what's going on in cray-cray land, first of all, it right-sizes it, kind of takes the wind out of it. And also, I get clear direction. Oh, God. Now, I have options. I don't have to do what they say. I can stay disturbed a little longer because some things I want to hold on to. That's a fact. So far, I haven't walked on water. The amends thing. If I don't talk to somebody and get a clear understanding of what's really going on, I can usually muck it up. I can be making amends and doing things that really weren't even frickin' necessary because I magnify everything. You know, it all my perception is off. And then I looked up coming in here, and I don't have it, what the word resolutely means. One of the words in the definition was admirably. To admirably move towards something. It reminded me of trudging, you know, to walk with purpose. Turn my thoughts to somebody else, to purposely go look for somebody else to help, because guess what? I'm trying not to cuss.
Me too.
I say this to one of my sponsees all the time. I'm full of self. I've got my own head up, my own you know what, and I'm just thinking about me, and I've got to get it out and start thinking about somebody else. And that's how I get undisturbed. Love and tolerance of others is our code. I agree with David on the tolerance thing. For me, tolerance is like it's a Band-Aid, really. It's a state that I can, I need to go there if that's the best I got, but I'm really hoping I can, I tell my girl Shuddy, restraint, you know, leave them the frick alone. Love and tolerance, leave them be, until I can get to that place where they're okay, they can be exactly as they are. They're allowed. They don't need to move, they don't need to shift gears so that I'll be okay again. I have to let them alone. The 12 and 12 talks a lot about restraint, you know? And that is, for me, it's the underlying principle behind step 10. I've got to have the space and the time by taking my own inventory to let you be who you are. Just like in 3 and all those, you know, where I had to pause, wait, tolerance is, I don't want to live in a state of tolerance. You know, that means I'm like, I might kill you, maybe not. Anyway, that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you. Grace.
Continue on page 84. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely, and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we fight, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, we talked for over half the meeting on that first paragraph, which is, because there's a lot in there, you know. And one more thing I want to say about that is that, you know, the 12th step says that we've had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. We tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs, right? And I suspect that the instructions that we just read there on 84 is the roadmap for practicing these principles in all our affairs. We don't have to even be weird about that. It's written down. They hid it from us in the book. So what Seth just read, really, there's no action in here. These are the promises. These are the results. These are the observations, right? I mean, as the result of practicing these first 10 steps, I noticed that I'm not interested in fighting, you know? As the result of these first 10 steps, I noticed that I'm not worried about alcohol. I don't have to change my people, places, and things. I can go anywhere in this world that free men go. If I'd have spent the last 29 years going, oh, I better not go there, they have liquor, you know, white knuckling it, you know, managing it, avoiding it, you know. I reckon I'd have gotten drunk by now, you know, or just ended it, which I'm have a tendency to consider from time to time. But I noticed that I'm not interested in liquor. You know, in the time, and we get our sanity back too, somehow. At least with regards to alcohol, you know, we react sanely and normally, right? So for me, everything that alcohol did to me, everything that alcohol and drugs put me through, if you offer me some, the only sane response is, "I'm good. I had enough." I mean, that's the only sane response given the evidence behind me. You know what I mean? It's like you walk up to me, hey, David, you want a beer? And I'm like, well, you know, usually when I have a beer, I get lost for 3 or 4 weeks at a time, lose everything, end up sticking needles in my arm. Somebody's going to the hospital. Sure. It's clearly insane, right? Okay. So that's not happening, right? I'm not debating it. It's not. And none of that is a decision on my part. It just comes. It's just there. I'm reporting to you that that's my condition, right? I would no more take a drink. I might be drunk as a monkey tomorrow, okay? I mean, it's possible. I may not die sober. Nothing's guaranteed. But I can honestly tell you that I would no more take a drink of alcohol tonight than I would stick my hand in a box of poisonous snakes. You know, it makes that much sense to me. You know, hey, Dave, we got this groovy box of poisonous snakes. I'm like, nah, I'm good. You can keep that. You know, and I'm not jealous of the guy who can reach in there and handle it, you know, maybe play a clarinet and make it, you know, oh gosh, I wish I could do that, you know. I don't care. You can keep your box of snakes. I'm not interested. I know what it does to me. I mean, I know in a sane, rational way what it does to me, right? Self-knowledge doesn't keep us sober. Willpower doesn't keep us sober. But the truth is, I'm in touch with what one drink does to me today. And given that, I wouldn't make that choice. I'm not putting everything on my line. I'm not putting all three of my children who've never seen me drunk. Why don't we just put that up on the auction block? Well, you know, roll the wheel. It'll be different this time. That's clearly insane, right? So it says it's a miracle. I'm not fighting it. I'm not avoiding it. I dig that placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. You know, like when I carry meetings up into the jail, and that's like there's a lot of people who come into AA, newcomers often. Certainly these guys in the jail, they've got it all tied up with morality, you know? Like, I'm bad. It's bad. It's bad. Alcohol, bad, you know? I'm like, yeah, alcohol's fine. It's not a problem. I don't have a moral problem with drugs and alcohol. I'll tell my kids that. I don't think it's bad. But what it does to me, I just can't. So it's not a moral issue. I feel neutral about it. I feel safe. I'm not in danger. I can go to the grocery store. I may go down the aisle that has beer in it. It's not calling me, you know. I haven't sworn off. The problem's been removed as a result of the first 10 steps, as the result of being changed from the inside, as the result of a spiritual experience. The problem has been removed. Now, do you need to keep solving a problem that's gone, you know? You ever have that experience where like something, some problem, something you're worried about just kind of resolves itself? You know, for one way or another, you get a letter in the mail. It's like, I just got one. I got a letter in the mail. I thought I was going to owe money on my taxes, and then I got a letter in the mail, and it was like a refund. I was like, oh. And then in that moment, I didn't realize how much that was weighing on me, you know, how much that was dragging me down until it was solved, you know? Yeah, all right. But anyway, the problem's removed, right? I don't have to keep solving it. I don't have to keep managing it. But it says that what I have to do is keep in fit spiritual condition. That's really the end game. When we started writing the inventory in the fourth step, it says not only have we been bodily and mentally ill, we've also been spiritually sick. Three things wrong with David: bodily ill, mentally ill, spiritually sick. And the greatest promise in the book is one sentence after that. It says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So if I straighten out spiritually, I straighten out mentally, and it's a 3-for-1 deal. A lot of bang for the buck there. So I got to keep in fit spiritual condition. And how many of us, man, I mean, I talk on the phone with drunks all day long. How many of us are obsessed with the new job, obsessed with the new relationship, obsessed with the new gym membership, obsessed with our new fitness program, obsessed with that stuff? And there's nothing wrong with jobs and fitness. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with psychiatry. Nothing wrong with religion. Nothing wrong with any of that. Until I start trying to treat my alcoholism with it, then I got a problem. Thanks.
And we have ceased fighting. Anything or anyone? I'm gonna go with that for a sec. Even alcohol. The alcohol problem has been removed. Actually, for me, the alcohol problem, the obsession to drink was removed for me very early on. I know by the time I got to here, by doing that previous work, drinking's not my problem anymore. See, I know that. It's my thinking. I'm going to tell you, I'm really not all right all the time. My mother passed away about 1.5 years ago. See, people are my trouble. Relationships are my trouble. This step for me is all about you guys, dealing with you guys. So my mother was my toughest relationship, and she was my best teacher. It was a very long, drawn-out life. And I'm grateful for every second of it today. Today I am. But through the process of that, her death, and I was present for it, and I'm so grateful that I had the 12 steps. And she died, and she saw me sober. And I sat right there and held her hand while she took her last breath. It was a miracle. And there was no more regret. There was no more. Everything that was said or should have been said was said. I had no bad feelings. I'm one of 10 children. Oh, my God. And there are some serious issues with my people. I mean, we put the funk in dysfunctional. So my father's been gone a while anyway. My mother left this earth and has, you know, is rocking and rolling now, I know. But I'm left to deal with my siblings. And so about 1.5 years ago, we're dealing with my mother's property and whatnot. So, you know, I'm doing my gig. I'm going to meetings. I'm good. I'm one day at a time living in this thing, getting on my knees. I'm doing the thing. My sister, one of them, now just to give you the whole gig, her husband's been diagnosed with terminal cancer. Our mother's just died. She was left the executrix because my alcoholic debacle left me incapable of being of any use in my mother's eyes. So my sister's had to deal with all of this. And she calls me on the phone to give me this happy news that I didn't like. And in a nanosecond, I went up one side of her and right down the next. I chewed her a new one for about what seemed like an eternity with no thought, no pause, no shutty.
No shutty.
Until I reduced her to a sniveling, you know, and I hung up on her. And I was actually on my way to a sponsee's house. We were going out for an AA event, I think. Oh, God. And I walk in there, and I had what we refer to in AA as an emotional hangover. And it was awful. I think it was worse than I felt as bad, if not worse, than my drinking bottom. That's how awful I felt. I don't know if anybody can relate to that, because drinking's not an option for me anymore. I kind of sit with the crap I do. And I walked in there and I vomited all over a few people in there, told them what was going on. And went home. I don't think I called her that night. But at any rate, I did. It reduced me to go seeking God. I remember banging my hands on the shower. Jesus, help me. Gee, I went to Jesus. There's a sight, Grace naked in the shower. And I got in bed and I thought, and I'm so glad for this step, because I prayed to God, and I mean, I meant it. And I said, God, please, if you see fit to give me another opportunity. And I will tell you, this was all about money, because there's two things that will send me into a sheer killing frenzy, and that's money or my kids. That's it. I lose all rationale. I keep praying for it. It just doesn't come instinctively yet. But I prayed to God that if I had another opportunity to help me, give me the strength for restraint, to shut my damn mouth, to sit still and let God's will be done. Now, we're not there yet, but we're almost there yet. Please, dear God, please, 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 please. Because there was no amount of money worth the way I felt. My serenity is priceless today. It is absolutely priceless. So when it says we have ceased fighting anything, sometimes I haven't. I don't fight alcohol anymore, but this concept has to go with me through everything. That's that spiritual world that I agreed to enter into. And yet, damn, it was gone in a heartbeat when you touch some of those fears, which it talked about earlier, that I have to watch for. So God's really funny with me, has quite a sense of humor, loves me a whole lot, because I got that opportunity. And I was very quickly reminded in my head, the little, you know, because I am sane today. I'm not drunk all the time. I am firing with both pistons firing. You know, I'm running. And I had that opportunity, and I spoke rashly and calmly to my siblings. It did not go the way I wanted it to go, but I will tell you that I have freedom, because I did practice that. Sometimes the actions that I have to take, because this is a program of action, as my first sponsor used to say all the time, I have to act as if, even if I don't like it, even if it's not my way, I have to act as if. This, because the payoff is so much on the other side. There is such a payoff. It's serenity, it's peace. That's why I drank, because I couldn't shut this, you know, it was constant. And now I have it. I have these tools. The fit spiritual condition, that is a fact. You know, what would it have been like for me? I don't know, but I will tell you, I'm so grateful that the foundation I have, that I do one day at a time. I have one day, I get a daily reprieve, that's it, a daily reprieve. I don't have to. We were talking about this before the meeting, you know, today is it. Sometimes today is not pleasant, but I know tomorrow's going to be different. Today's all I got. And if I can do the best I can today, that's why I thank God for this step. If I'm disturbed, the problem's me. That's the solution. I'm the only thing I can do anything about. You know, when it was you, it was awful. This was a horrible world to live in. My God, I got up every morning ready to do battle. That's how it felt. Thanks.
Thanks, Grace.
We're going to continue on page 85. It is easy to let up on spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is proper use of the will.
I love, how bad did it get? I'll tell you how bad it was. I had to go to Jesus. That was awesome. It's the proper use of the will. We get our will back on page 85. Look at that. We got our sanity back on page 84. It's good that we got our sanity back before we got our will back, right? Of course, we have a very limited use of our will, the way he describes it here, right? Thy will not mine be done. How can I serve thee? These are thoughts which must go with me constantly. I can exercise my willpower all I wish along these lines. I don't know about y'all, but I'm a fur piece away from a constant thought of others and how I might help meet their needs. But it says constantly. He says constantly about a dozen times in here. Mm-hmm. I like what my friend points it out. Like it's like using the North Star to navigate, right? We know we're not going to get to the North Star. We know that. But if we head toward it, we're going to move in a direction that's useful. So can I at least entertain the thoughts of how can I best serve thee? Thy will not mine be done. Can I remember that that's a practice, you know? I want to just say a couple things about the first thing. It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels, our past accomplishments, right? He says it's easy. That must mean it's not difficult. He says I'm heading for trouble if I do that because I'm not cured of alcoholism. So this absolutely is my story. I mean, I came in here in the first 6 years. I busted my ass. I said yes to everything that AA had to tell me to do. I said yes, and I guess what? I got the results of that. My whole life got better. What I know today that I could not have told you at the time was that I did enough of the first 9 steps for those promises to come true in my life and for me to be welcome at the Thanksgiving table again. I like being welcome at the Thanksgiving table again. You know, I like getting accolades at work. I like getting attention from ladies. I like stuff that's happening to me, and it's happening to me. And instead of making the conversion over into 10, 11, and 12 as a daily way of living, I basically just leaked out of AA. I rested on my accomplishments. I'm like, I'm good now. That drinking thing's over with. I got the whole, got. I'm signing mortgages, you know. I'm the block captain in my civic league. I'm the Cub Scout captain now, you know, or whatever the Cub Scout guy is, leader, dude. I needed a lot of clipboards in that phase of my life. And I liked being a guy who needed clipboards, you know, like a coach or something, you know. And all the while, AA just went slowly away. And I can tell you that I did that for about 7 years and ruined my life, burned my life to the ground without taking a single drink of alcohol or sticking any dope. Ruined a marriage, alienated my children, wrecked a business, thinking about suicide. Sober. So if drinking's my problem, not drinking would be the solution. That has been solved a long time ago. But I did not keep spiritually active. I did not stay engaged on a daily basis in Alcoholics Anonymous as a way of living. That's a death sentence for somebody like me. Dry alcoholism is like standing on an oxygen hose and telling me to breathe. It's impossible. I need air. I need light. I need you. I need to do this. So, I'm not cured of alcoholism. We probably aren't going to do the fourth paragraph. Grace?
Okay. Let's see here. The proper use of the will. I like that. We get our will back. Just one way, though. His way. Damn, that's not mine. I'm going to be short. I'm going to say this. I heard a speaker. I wish I could tell you I made all this stuff up. It was mine. None of it's mine. But I love it, and I say it every morning. I'll preface, too. The first few years I was here, I did not get on my knees to pray. I had a lot of good reasons why. My knees hurt. I got bad knees. My bed's real high. It was too, you know, I had a lot of reasons. God knew. God understood. And then for all the wrong reasons, I started doing it a couple of years ago. And I cannot tell you the change it has made in my life. Not because of stuff, but my attitude, the way I feel. So in the morning when I get up today, because there's a quick little thing that I heard somebody say, and I love it, and it directs to this last line. It says, God, direct my thoughts, my deeds, and my words. And when I ask God to do something, man, he does it. It happens, even if I don't know it. I like that. It's short, it's sweet, it's to the point, and I feel safe and protected. Thanks.
Thanks, Grace.
All right, we're going to pass the seven tradition basket.
I ain't got no gas.
You want some?
You're my kind of gal.
See? I want some money.
The seven tradition states every area group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each other's group's rent and other expenses, the seven traditions is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and the responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and general services office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences and might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholics who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all the groups around the world, we may want to remember that not a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any announcements for the good of AA?
Hi, I'm Grace, alcoholic.
Hi, Grace.
Anybody interested in some good service work? Treatment committee has a lot of openings and needs all the help we can get. We meet typically the first Wednesday of every month. Anybody interested at 6:30, by the way. Anybody interested, you can see me or Morgan. There he is.
Hey, Morgan.
After the meeting, thanks.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I'm Morgan. I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Morgan.
Mama.
This home group, not in this room, but in the big room, on May 27th, which is Memorial Day, is having a supper and a speaker. There's some beautiful mint green flyers right there. There's probably some in here that you can take to your groups. That is May 27th. The speaker is Steve M. Am I right about
Steve
that?
Mitchell with one L.
Steve M. from Raleigh. And yeah, that'll be food at 6, speaker at 7. Love to have you all there. Come on out. Thanks.
Thank you. Anybody else? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members?
Hold up.
All right. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd like to welcome you.
Brian.
Tina.
Brian. Hey, Brian, welcome.
Welcome.
Tina, welcome.
Tina, welcome.
Hey, Shelby, welcome.
Welcome. Welcome.
Tony, alcoholic.
Tony!
Hey, Tony, welcome.
Welcome. Welcome.
All right. Literature. Literature is available over here on the table we have set up over here. Maddie did a great job as usual. Please see any home group member after the meeting if you're interested in purchasing a book. The pamphlets are free to take. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have any questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after the close of the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Closing. Would you please help me in thanking the panel again? Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue our conversation on the step discussed tonight. at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol. Who would like to volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Just BJ.
My name's BJ, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, BJ.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Have a great way to
Resolutely.
Close.
Resolutely. Resolutely. Yes. Like that.
All right, Seth.
Can't either, we close.
Does that the circle represent what we can do together, we can never do alone? Followed by a moment of silence and then the Lord's Prayer. Who keeps us sober?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.